Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Tinfoil Hat with Sam Tripoli. Today's episode is brought to you by the podcast Espionage. Codenames, deception, gadgets. It might seem like something out of the movies, but these are just some of the essential components of being a spy. Most spies don't stand out like James Bond or Ethan Hunt. They are ordinary, forgettable people, which makes them all the more dangerous. So what does it really take to be a spy? Every week, the Parcast Network original show Espionage explores the high-stakes world and analyzes the missions behind the world's most incredible spies and what they brought their covert operations into the public eye. Find out the real-world spy tactics required to impersonate, exploit, and infiltrate the most confidential places in the world. You'll be shocked by the episode on Larry Chin, one of the CIA's top Chinese linguistics, who was the Chinese top spy for more than 30 years. Search for and subscribe to Espionage wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, search Espionage or visit parcast.com/espionage to listen now. And please enjoy this podcast.
Tinfoil Hat.
Oh, what the fuck are you guys even talking about?
Global controls will have to be imposed, and a world governing body will be created to enforce them.
Welcome to Tinfoil Hat. We go deep, homeboys. Eric, open your mind. Drink from the fountain of knowledge. There's lizard people everywhere. That's some interdimensional shit. Wake up, Aaron.
This is only the beginning.
Dude, you just blew my mind.
Yeah. Here we go. We got some. Oh, there we go. Yeah. Welcome to Tinfoil Hat. We finally figured out how to get the video in the video, so I hope you enjoyed that opening. We love that, and we appreciate it from everyone from Sukum Films. They're nice enough to do that for me. As always, my partner in crime, XG, in the place to be.
What's up, my
how
dude?
How are you, dude?
Good. Good.
It's got
good.
A wonderful week of chaos coming out. I want to give it up for our sponsors real quick. Give it up for BetDSI. BetDSI for all your bet needs. Go to BetDSI. Use the promo code HAT100 and use that to just make bets on all these. It's a wonderful time to do sports. Start betting now because it's about to get to just baseball. But we have UFC. We have NBA playoffs. Basketball. Boxing is killing it. The draft's coming up, and this should be out on that day. No, this will actually be out on Wednesday, so it already came out before the draft. But get that. Use the promo code HAT100, and they will double your deposit up to $500. Hook it up and help it out. You guys are the best. I appreciate you guys listening to our sponsors. Coming up on Tuesday, it is our good friends at Absolute Extract. ABX.org presents Comedy Chaos live at the Comedy Store. The lineup is coming together. I will be announcing it this Tuesday, so by the time this is out, you'll get it. It is going to be a killer lineup, like always. It's the best show at the Comedy Store. Come and support. Go to ABX.org. Check out our friends. They have everything. They got the vape pens. They got the flower. They got the balms. They got good-looking women. By the way, weed chicks are way better than the weed chicks back in the day. The other ones, they look crunchy, granola. These all chicks all look like futuristic strippers, and we love them. So go to our good friends at ABX.org. Help support those who help support the show. The Patreon is crushing right now. Go check it out. We got Conspiracies Now. It's a free flow show. If you want us to do more topical stuff, that is what the Patreon's for. It's called Conspiracies Now, and people are loving it. It's the number one worst public access show you'll ever see in your life, but it's fun, and it's a really, really good show, and I'm pretty proud of it. We record it every Wednesday at 9 p.m. at the Comedy Store. If you're in L.A., you want to come hang out, come watch it. Unfortunately, it won't be this Wednesday because I'm filming something for the CW. I'm very excited about that. So as this comes out, I will be in Montauk. New York, and so you can go check that out. What else we got? T-shirts. Go check out. You want to support the show? Buy a T-shirt. Go to tinfoilhatt-shirts.com, and you could grab that. And all the dates, I mean, we got everything on it. New shirts are going up all the time. It's all fan art. Fans, they you know, they send us them. We pick the ones we like, and we turn them into shirts so that you guys can have it. That's Samzilla. We got Ronin shirts. We got a lot of samurai stuff and more to come. And then everybody in New York, the tinfoil hat is coming to Skankfest. I believe that's the second week in June. Go to Skankfest.
June 21st to the 23rd.
Third week.
There
myself,
we
XG, Tim Dillon, we are live and we are doing that show and we are super duper excited about it. So we're going to put that all together and it's going to be a great show. We're going to be in a bigger room. Last time we packed it out, the show's even bigger. So we're going to be in a bigger room. So go and check that out. Tim Dillon is always on fire. Did we hit everything?
Yep.
We did everything. My God, I'm getting good at this. How long was that, Aaron? 445. That's amazing. You guys are, I am great. You are lucky. as you know, this show, we do a lot of geopolitics, and we've been doing a lot. I'm kind of over it. I mean, we know what's going on. We know the game being played. A lot of people want me to do something on Julian Assange. I don't think anyone knows what's going on. I don't know if people think Trump's in on it. They're not on it. I've heard stuff that Chelsea Manning's father is a spy for the the British Navy, and he's Five Eyes, and this has all been a long setup. So I'm holding off before we do a show on it because I want to know what's going on. I want to see when the second shoe drops. But I love getting into the occult. I love studying the stuff that maybe physics can't explain. Right? Because everyone thinks there's these rules of physics and everything's got to be within physics. It's very funny because most likely Freemasons made the rules of physics. We don't hate all Freemasons here, okay? Just like any group, there's some bad apples. But the rules of physics were made by Freemasons to keep you to play within this group. It's like the rules of boxing. Well, I can punch, but what about MMA? I can't do any of that. Well, they don't want you doing that. They don't want you looking at it. There's things that the laws of physics cannot explain. And here to talk about, he is the producer of the Third Eye Spies. He's director, editor, producer. He's a one-man band. Please welcome Lance Mangia.
Hey, Sam. How are you?
Did I get it?
Yes, you got
yes,
it right.
Thank yes. you, Lance. Thank you,
you got
so
it perfectly,
much
man.
For coming on. First of all, I got to be honest with you. Your movie blew me away.
Sweet.
Not just from, like, just the story, but the production value was great. Usually when I got to watch somebody's movies, I'm like, oh, this is... it's like going to see your buddy's band in L.A. You're like, oh, this is not going to be good. And then one time you go and they blow you away, you're like, wow. That guy yep. could do something real for it, man. So we just want to run a trailer. Your movie's called Third Eye Spies, and we just want to run it real quick. And let's see if XG can do this. And stop. Oh, here it is.
If you had an ability to be able to remotely perceive stuff any place in the world, that could be an extraordinary intelligence.
Well, you people
source.
Get an audio. Blast.
We working. Found that many individuals are able to accurately describe
okay, go
what's
to
going
it.
On
stop
in
it.
Distant
stop
locations.
It. Stop.
Are you saying that the work you've stop. Been doing is classified?
Right. It was a research facility. That
it's
was
a great film. There's a lot of cool stuff going on right now.
You have to use your
they
imagination.
They can't see.
Russians
and we're going to have to listen to it because we don't know how to stop it either.
There's dancing bears.
They're just so close.
You
just
beautiful
close
women.
Psychic
dude,
spy.
The CIA know we're doing this.
Almost a psychic
the CIA
arm
is just covering
here.
It up.
Is there any real application?
They're blocking the signal,
right,
man.
There we go. When in doubt,
that's all right. We'll put a link,
okay?
man. Just put a link.
We'll put a link
put
in
put a
there.
Link to the trailer, and you can see the dancing bears in Russia for yourself.
XG is as good at that as he is using ways to get directions back to the hotel. It's okay, XG.
Stop working. Look at
XG,
this computer.
You crushed on the last show. You're loud.
It's my psychic ability, man. It's
yes.
like interfering with the signal.
Third Eye Spies. It's basically along the lines of the Men Who Stare at Goats almost. It is the remote viewing.
Right, right. It's about remote viewing. I mean, I think Men Who Stare at Goats is kind of the satirical notion of this, but it's actually not Men Who Stare at Goats. It's actually the real 20-year government program where basically every U.S. intelligence agency used psychic abilities to spy on the Soviet Union very, very successfully for about 20 years before it was publicly outed, and then it probably went further underground.
So you're saying successfully?
Absolutely successfully.
Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah.
How did you get into this?
Well, when I was a kid, I had a dog-eared version of Reader's Digest, and somebody that was in the U.S. Army remote viewing program leaked this out, like long before it had come out, and I read this article and I loved it. And so I always kind of tried to follow, you know, this whole idea that the U.S. Army was using psychics as spies. I thought it was just cool, like scanners or, you know, something, you know. And years later, just by coincidence, a man by the name of Russell Targ, who was one of the founders of the original remote viewing program that happened at Stanford Research Institute, is where the first research was done on this. He happened to see my first movie on YouTube. The movie is called Six String Samurai. It's kind of a cult movie.
Paul, you... What do you mean?
Oh, yeah, I directed it.
You directed Six String Samurai?
Fuck yeah, man.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, totally.
That's amazing.
I love
that movie.
Oh, right on. There you go.
I'm blown away.
Yeah.
Dude, that movie is excellent.
Thank you.
The samurai, dude. That's great, man. Wow.
Yeah, that's where the glasses came from, man. I wear these glasses, and it's like, you know, that's the whole Six String Samurai connection.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a great movie, man. Thanks for making that movie.
Oh, you're welcome.
So he saw that awesome movie.
Yeah. He saw the movie, and through a mutual friend, he knew that I had a YouTube channel and a public access show where I was interviewing people who were interested in consciousness and, you know, psychic stuff. So he basically reached out to me, and he said, I have a script, and I'd love you to read it and maybe make this movie. And luckily, I knew who he was. I already knew who Russell Targ was. He's a very well-known physicist and, you know, very well-respected in the field of parapsychology. So even though I read his script, I wasn't thrilled about the narrative script. You know, I said, I'm glad to give you notes on it and everything. It's not really something I want to make. I said, but I think the real story here is the U.S. government's 20-year investment in psychic abilities. I said, can't we talk about that? I said, that's a freaking movie, man.
That's a movie.
Cool. You know, and he goes, well, that's a very interesting idea. He says, why don't I fly out to L.A. and let's talk about it. So he literally flew from San Francisco to L.A. and he literally showed up at my front door with a briefcase full of documents. And we sat down at my, you know, living room table, and he just starts taking out all of these like drawings of like Soviet weapons factories and submarines and stuff where basically somebody sitting in a room somewhere had very, very meticulously drawn schematics of something going on thousands of miles away with absolutely no input other than their own imagination, you know, and gotten it completely correct.
Oh my God.
So we're looking at this and I'm going, all right, is the CIA gonna, you know, let us do this? Is they gonna come after me if I do this movie? You know, but it actually was so real and so much information. And he was there for 3 days. Like, I remember the first night I went to bed and I thought to myself, is this guy like schizophrenic or something? I mean, I know he's famous, but it's like, it's so compelling, you know, and that made me realize, you know, we need to get everybody involved that had done this on record, because it's so unbelievable that even me knowing enough about this, you need the credibility of all of the different people with PhDs after their names that were actually involved. So that's what I told Russell. I mean, the next day I said, look, I'm really into this and I'd love to do the film. But if we do this, we have to get everybody on record, you know, everybody that we can find and basically preserve that testimony, because some of these people were getting older.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's like a tree falling in the forest. If nobody hears it, does it make a sound?
Right.
You know, it's like it's just too unbelievable unless you see the firsthand testimony.
If nobody tells the story, did it really happen?
Right. So we basically set off to contact a lot of these people. And this was only able to be done now because of Russell's efforts getting the program declassified. Because when he first started trying to get it declassified after he left the program in the 80s, it was all marked automatic do not downgrade, which is the CIA's most classified version of stuff, meaning it doesn't automatically ever get declassified, you know. So he had to petition, you know, Congress people and allies in the program, and you know, after the closure of the program in the 90s, to actually get all of that stuff done.
Do you think the program has been closed? I mean, if this is so effective, and I don't want to jump the gun, but there's this notion that they would stop doing it. Hey, we stopped doing it. It's all done. No more. We learned our lessons. Bad us. We dropped it. It's like, if it's effective.
Well, you know, yeah, they're still doing it.
Okay. So let's get into this. I didn't mean to throw us off guard.
No. It's fine. But I just want to say, if you had a tool that is so effective, and I've heard people say, like, oh, maybe it was just propaganda. Maybe it never worked. You know, and I actually had that thought. I thought maybe I'm, like, being suckered here, and I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be manipulated into doing something that's not real. And even if I had found evidence that went against what I was doing, I still would have presented that evidence. But when I started to see contemporary people doing this in front of me, you know, in ways that I couldn't make sense of as to how it worked, I went, okay, wait a minute. Somebody's not getting something here. Like, we're not getting the full story about this. And if it works now, then it worked then. And if these are just people that I'm around now, what about if I had all the resources of the U.S. government and I could go find the most badass people that ever did any of this stuff and put them in a room and then have satellites to back up what it is that they find? And I realized, they're still doing it. But it doesn't cost anything. So it's like the three of us right now could like get out a piece of paper and like concentrate on something hidden over there.
Yeah.
And like write it down. There's no like big computers needed or any of that. So you can hide all that stuff. It's almost like as if they were just to take like the blackwaterization of it. They probably left the official government reporting behind.
Right.
And then they just went to like private contractors.
And then there's the black ops funding and all that stuff. And it's why like a government buys a hammer for like $3,000.
Right. It's in the Department of the Navy's trash removal fund.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah. I mean, seriously.
So we get into it's about remote viewing. Remote viewing?
Remote viewing is the act of using only the power of your own mind to see anywhere outside of time and space, to see objects, people, places, things, events that are otherwise completely hidden. And this is an ability that works whether you're looking in the past. To a certain extent, you can look into the future. You certainly can look at the now, you know, of today. And what they found was that this was actually not an uncommon ability. This is an ability that is like a bell curve of creativity. I mean, everybody has some ability to a certain extent. Some people may be virtuosos at it. Maybe other people can just carry a tune.
Right.
But it's sort of just our own intuition, and applying that intuition to see things that are hidden and distant. That's basically remote viewing.
I talk about, I have a cousin who could, and this isn't remote viewing, but along the lines of psychic, you could take some, put in his hand, he could tell you the complete history of it, where it's been, what happened, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
There's psychics all over LA. I mean, we can go to a psychic right now and probably
dude, if I
cool reading, you know, but it's not a science of an ability. It's an intuitive ability. What remote viewing did was basically just take this and put it into a structure. So that there are certain things that you do and ways that you report out the information and where it becomes much more sort of verifiable. And believe it or not, they found that the people who were the best at doing this were people who were just ordinary people who had never done it before. You know, like if you were to go to like, you know, Madame Zola, and with the crystal ball and say, here, be a remote viewer, they may not be a very good remote viewer because they have their own way of sort of doing their own psychic work and whatever. They found that the people who could do this were people who maybe like the successful scientists from another laboratory, people who were successful in other fields, people who were kind of outgoing and had a very grounded, balanced perspective on life, you know, not the crazy far out, you know, psychic,
not the crazy cat lady,
right,
or the lady sitting outside the psychic reading that is the only business in Los Angeles that never shuts down.
Right,
I've seen Starbucks, Sizzlers, but somehow the psychic lady who sits outside what looks like a third world dictator mansion on Melrose never shuts down.
Then she's probably pretty good.
What?
Have you been inside one?
They don't like when men walk in. Have you ever noticed that?
Go with
your girlfriend.
Well, it depends on who you're going to. Like if you go go to the gypsies, like there's a lot of, like the gypsies really do have like some sort of thing where they do this stuff, but it's a very sort of, you know, it's a complicated thing. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to go to somebody who you walk in and they may have some real ability maybe, but then they're going to look at your palm and go, oh, you're cursed.
Yeah.
If only you'd buy my candle for $600, yeah. I can fix it. I've actually had that happen to me once. You know, and it's like, I'll just deal with it. You know, it's something that you don't necessarily need to have outside of yourself. You know, right. And that's the thing I think that is the biggest secret. You know, is that if the U.S. government knew that you know, then you're just as powerful as they are, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's like, what happens if like everybody knows this? You can go back in time. You talk about the Freemasons and other hidden societies, and even some churches today, perhaps, and secret groups and things like that. All of these people knew this stuff. All of this, all of them. You know, but they keep the information hidden. The Mayan, you know, priest dude on top of the temple holding the beating heart or whatever, you know, he knew a lot of this stuff, but he wasn't telling the people down at the bottom of the pyramid because
right.
then he'd lose his power, right?
Right.
So I think a lot of it is about that.
You have to, it's almost when you are, I hope this makes sense. When baby elephants are small, they tie a rope to its leg and it can't get out.
Mm-hmm.
So when it grows older, they tie the rope around its leg, and even though it's powerful,
right.
it thinks,
that's it.
I can't go.
Dude.
So they have to convince you you need them mm-hmm. in order to do this stuff, and without them, you're powerless or you're garbage, when in reality, you are the one. It's like again, Dumbo's magic feather.
Yes.
You always had the power, you just put it into some symbolism right mm-hmm. there.
Well, when this all got started, it was the standard, I don't know if you ever saw Ghostbusters, and you know, like the little card tricks they do at the beginning of Ghostbusters, where Bill Murray's like shocking the guy, and he's like, oh, guess what's on the card,
yeah.
you know, right? Okay, so that's what that's literally taken from like Stanford Research Institute back in the
oh, wow.
you know 70s. That's what they were doing. They weren't shocking people, but they were like doing
they were probably shocking.
Maybe they were. They didn't talk about it very much.
If you listen to what happened to the Unabomber, they were shocking people.
Maybe over in the MK Ultra area.
Oh, okay, you know, different department.
Different department.
Wrong floor. Psychic viewing
shocking,
upstairs.
Shocking's in the basement.
Yeah.
You know, LSD up at the top.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Different department.
Okay, so they were literally just doing these card tricks, and they had one guy who was an actual real claimed to be the greatest psychic in the world. His name was Ingo Swann.
And, you got to be with that name. You
yeah,
can't work
you
at Burger King.
I don't know if
you
made
Ingo
that up
Swann.
Or it was his real name, but I mean, it's a cool name, right?
Yeah, Ingo Swann.
And Ingo said, you know, you're having me do these stupid card tricks. If you want to know what's in the envelope, just pick up the fucking envelope and read it. You know, I can see anywhere on the planet. Give me something better to look at.
Yeah.
You know, and so to humor this guy, they started sending an assistant out for coffee at lunch or something. And they'd say, all right, well, you know, you tell us where he is. And the guy would write down details of where the assistant had gone that were accurate. And so they said, well, gee, we're onto something here. And then over a period of months, they figured out they could use coordinates. And they could use latitude and longitude, and without any other information knowing what's going on, they could give this guy just, you know, okay, 48 degrees this and 50 degrees that, and then he would tell you what was at that location anywhere on the planet.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, anywhere on the planet. So when this got out, the CIA was secretly monitoring
of course.
Their progress, right?
Of course.
and somebody from CIA shows up and says, you know, yeah, we've been looking for you guys. You know, and apparently the Soviet Union at the time was spending untold millions at like 70-some different laboratories all around the Soviet Union, not just studying this stuff, but the intelligence reports they were getting were saying they were using it operationally. So this was scaring the CIA, and they didn't know. They thought maybe it was all just propaganda. So they told Stanford Research Institute, where these two scientists, Russell Targ, who's my producer, and Hal Puthoff, who was his partner, if you can prove this works, we'll fund you.
Wow.
You know, he says, but we don't think it does work. We think it's bullshit. You know, so if this is just BS, well, then whatever. But we actually want you to disprove it is what we want. And of course, they basically gave a random set of coordinates to SRI, and SRI
Ingo,
took those
right,
coordinates to two different psychics. One was Ingo Swann. The other man was by the name of Pat Price. Pat Price was a police commissioner in Burbank, in the city, actually. We're in Burbank, you know. Yeah. He had just retired, and he had read some of the public study stuff that had been done at SRI, and he wanted to be involved. So they said, "Oh well, okay, send him the coordinates and just see what he comes back with, right?" So they sent him the coordinates independently. They had Ingo look at the coordinates. They both come back with descriptions of underground bases, missile silos, military barracks, large doors, and all this kind of stuff. And the scientists look at this. They have no idea if it's accurate. We don't know. They just send it off back to CIA, and the guy at CIA looks at it and goes, "This is bogus. This is totally not what I told them to look at. I told them to look at my buddy's cabin in the woods. You know, that's it." You know, and then, you know, so Kit, this is the guy in the movie, calls Russell and says, "What's the deal, you know, with this? This is not what I gave you." And then Russell says, "Well, that's odd, because both of our guys were independently coming up with very similar results." So Kit decides to take a family vacation for the weekend out to the woods of Virginia, where these coordinates
were.
Mm-hmm. And as he's driving down the road, he's looking out and he's seeing this giant radar dish out in the distance, and sounds like something that had been described. And so he goes, "Gee, I wonder what that is." So he looks it up and he finds out it's one of the most top secret sites that the NSA has. It's a listening post to spy on Russian satellites. And literally for 100-mile radius in that whole area, you can't even have like a walkie-talkie. It's so secret.
Really?
Yeah. It's a radio-free zone. It's called Sugar Grove. It's retired now, but just recently.
And so they say.
Yeah, exactly. So he sends this stuff out to NSA and says, "Is there any validity to any of this stuff?" And then the next thing you know, CIA, FBI, NSA, all of these guys are showing up at this dude's office. Like, what the hell are you doing sending psychics in California to spy on the NSA? because they didn't just get it right. They got it really right.
Yeah.
You know, and especially Pat Price actually was able to give the names of top secret special access projects going on at that site.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He listed the name of the facility. He listed specific names of programs going on that were ongoing, and I checked into that to make sure.
Oh man, they must have flipped out.
Oh, they did. They did. In our film, we interviewed Ken Kress, who was an undercover CIA operative who was the physicist that was in charge of running the program at the inception. And he said once that information got back into NSA, that this little experiment, I'm sorry, CIA, that this little experiment had kind of blown up, it scared everybody. I mean, it all of a sudden everybody hit pause and went, "Wait a minute. Okay, so if you can see documents, then that means that none of our stuff is safe."
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're missing something here big time. And so they started funding Stanford Research Institute. And then at the same time, they also had Stanford Research Institute start training other people in government, sometimes without their knowledge. Like people would just show up and be like, "Oh, I just want to check out what you guys are doing." And then you find out later they're going back to CIA and doing it. You know, so this went on for 20 years. They worked for every single agency of the U.S. intelligence services, and they got very good operational results. The Army program was based out of Fort Meade, Maryland. For a number of years, did work out of there. And I talked to in the movie, Joe McMonagle's the most sort of famous remote viewer for the U.S. Army. He was given the Legion of Merit Award, which is the highest honor you can get as a non-combatant in the intelligence services.
Really?
Yeah, for his remote viewing. So you're going to tell me it didn't work? How come the dude got the Legion of Merit Award? Like, what was he like playing tiddlywinks with the Russians? Joe McMonagle.
Joe
McMonagle. Yeah, it's Chief Warrant Officer Joe McMonagle. And
really?
And he said that they got about and actually through the other research that I did as well, I learned that they got about 80% of their cases had positive evidence for remote viewing, meaning they got some things right, but 20% of their cases they solved completely. You know, so now the other thing you got to keep in mind is that these cases were cold cases. They were only given things in the remote viewing unit in the Army when nobody else could solve them. You know, like when they didn't know, when they just had no idea what was going on. So they would give, and they solved 20% of those cases and got positive evidence for over 80%. So that's like dramatic evidence of something.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah.
You know, that's of something. I mean, and so when I started this film, I was really, really compelled, not just by the spy versus spy, you know, conspiracy stuff, which is cool, right? But I was compelled by what this means to us, like as human beings, and into science in particular, because it means that we're missing something really
big.
Yes,
that there's something bigger going on.
Right, right. And it's the same stuff that has been talked about for years. I mean, for centuries. I mean, all of the mystics and the, you know, the prophets and stuff talk about this kind of stuff, and we always discount it as like sort of myth.
We all have that. We think of somebody, all of a sudden they call us. You know,
right.
There's just something, because we were talking kind of before about how like a lot of stuff in conspiracies get poo-pooed because it doesn't fit into the rules of physics or the laws of physics. And you were like, you said something really smart and basically like, you know, just think of how the rules have changed over time. It's like if I use 1850 scientific laws, how do I explain a microwave?
Right. There was a physicist, I forget his name, in the early 20th century that said, we don't need to study physics anymore. We know everything there is to know about physics. We don't need to study it. You know, and now, like 100 years later, we're realizing that what we know is just the tiniest little bit, you know, compared to what's actually out there. And actually, as time goes on, and we talk about stuff like psychic abilities, it's the evidence is mounting more and more, even in mainstream circles, through things like quantum physics, quantum entanglement, you know, that there is something there that we don't understand, you know. But the problem has been that we're looking at a very linear way of science. We're looking at a very particular dogmatic way of doing things. 1 + 1 always must equal 2.
Right.
You know, and in quantum mechanics, just like with your own consciousness, it doesn't work that way. We don't think linearly. You know, we don't operate on ones and zeros. So you can't go into a laboratory and replicate that result exactly the same every time, because every single point of consciousness, me, you, him, everybody, is different. You know, so we're all going to have slightly different filters and look at things a different way and bring our own BS onto the table. And so it's very hard to create a scientific theory,
right,
around consciousness, because there's no material thing that you can point to. It's not like I have a beam coming out of my head, you know, like in your poster, you know, there that literally you can like read and go. And see, the reason that the Soviets took this stuff so seriously and the reason that they did so well with it over a long period of time was because they were materialists. They believed that there had to be a material explanation for psychic abilities, because everything had a material explanation, because they're communists, you know. Lenin and Stalin and all these guys, they really believed that everything had a true material explanation, even consciousness. So what would happen over time is these scientists in the Soviet Union would disprove that. Like, they would send somebody into a submarine and go down at the very furthest depths of the ocean. They'd be like, all right, if it's a signal that's coming off of somebody's brain, then the water's going to dampen it and we're going to get a different result. And there would be no different result. They even sent...
Wow.
Yeah, no...
They would do that? They would send somebody in a submarine to the bottom of the ocean?
That's a real experiment that was done.
Wow.
Yeah, in the Soviet Union, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Looks like they did it better.
Well, yeah. they actually... The Soviets and the U.S. had different ways of looking at the phenomenon. The Soviets wanted outbound psi ability. They wanted to cause things. Like I'm going to think about Sam Tripoli, and I'm going to get him to have me on his show. I'm going to do that. I'm going to plant that thought. Like, you know, like that's what they were working on. Or they would try to, like, mess up electronics or try to, like, create some outcome in the world, like PK, like, you know, psychokinesis, like poltergeist shit. Right,
right. Right.
You know, but the Americans were much more concerned about inbound information. So they were concerned with, you know, gathering intelligence and preventing other people from seeing what they were doing. You know, so that was their focus. And the Americans claim to have been very successful in that, while the Soviets, the whole outbound thing, because that was more of their focus, they didn't do quite as well with that. You know, but again, it depends on who you talk to.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on who you talk to, because you can't really trust anything when
it comes to this stuff. You can't trust any of the information out there.
You have to discern for yourself. I'll tell you, I spent the first several months of making this film wondering, okay, is this for real? I mean, and keeping thinking about it. But it wasn't until I actually saw it for myself that then I went, all right. And it was actually in the film. I went to the International Remote Viewing Association conference.
There's a conference. Where is the conference?
Let's go, man. It's in Vegas.
When is it?
It's in Vegas.
Of course it's in Vegas.
Yeah, it's in Vegas. And there's actually one in June coming up called AppFest. I'll plug that.
What day is that?
It's like late June. But it's
AppFest.
Yeah, AppFest.
APP or
yeah,
AP?
APP. And that is actually the Applied Precognition Project.
I am there.
Oh, yeah. They do gambling.
Me.
Oh, let's go, man. I'm going to be there. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's go.
I will do that. I would love that.
Right on. Yeah, and they do gambling experiments and in Vegas. They actually... You know, that's how this one physicist that runs that program, his name is Marty Rosenblatt, and he's a physicist, used to be at SRI, and they get about, their best groups get like 75-80% hit rates in over under sports betting.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They when they should be getting 25% by
I'm
chance.
I'm gonna go meet some people.
Yeah,
this is for America.
Yeah.
How are you going to lose?
Yeah. Gematria?
Gematria, whatever that was. Yeah.
Right.
So when I saw the contemporary uses of this and saw the results like firsthand for myself, then I went, all right, you know, so this is not propaganda. You know, there's something to this. You know, you can't get that many people to pull the wool over somebody's eyes, you know, and for sure, U.S. intelligence took this stuff very, very seriously, you know, and actually a lot of their effort was geared towards making sure that the Russians can't do it to them. And for example, a remote viewer from the Army actually told me this. You know how there's this rule that politicians can't receive gifts? Like if I was to give you, here's a cell phone, Sam. You know, take this, comrade.
Yeah.
You take your cell phone. It'd be good for you.
Yeah.
You know, okay, fine. Now you're carrying around that phone, and that becomes like a psychic beacon, you know, because it's been marked by like a Soviet spy, you know, so that like if you're in some secret bunker somewhere doing something, it becomes a psychic listening device.
Oh, it's the old Alexa.
Right. It is. It's the psychic Alexa. It's the non-tech Alexa. And that was actually back in the 80s, they implemented a policy where it was like politicians and high ranking, you know, people in the military could not accept any gifts. If you get a gift, it goes into a storage room, you know, and it sits there until you're out of office. You know,
Shut up. Yeah. And that's why?
Well, that's what I was told. Yeah. Yeah. By somebody who was a remote viewer.
Holy. You know, I would love to know. Did you ever get to interview any Russians on that?
I did.
Did they have any interesting stories?
The Russian guy that I interviewed, and he did not make the film. He'll be on my YouTube page soon. It's youtube.com Waking Universe TV.
Yeah.
And that's my YouTube page. And it's an interview with a Ukrainian scientist. Who has spent a lot of years studying this phenomenon of remote viewing and psychic and stuff in general. And what he told me is that he has to publish under an assumed name now because it's become so cracked down on in the former Soviet Union, all over the Ukraine, Russia, those places. It's very much frowned upon now to even study this kind of phenomenon.
Oh, really?
They even ban books, he said, in the Ukraine about psychic ability and stuff like that. They don't want people dabbling in this. And so he publishes under an assumed name. But to be fair and non-conspiracy about it, you know, look, it's an embarrassing field for scientists who have PhDs after their name. I've seen it again and again and again when I've interviewed these guys. They know there's something to this. They know it's real. You know, I went to Cambridge and interviewed a Nobel laureate. Brian Josephson is in the film. And he told me that even though he's won a Nobel Prize for quantum physics, because he believes there's validity to psi ability, And because he spent years experimenting and studying with that, it's very hard for him to get funding, even though he's a Nobel Prize winner.
For that subject.
For anything. He's been blackballed.
If he wants to find out why Weibull's wobble, but they don't fall down.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. He can't get that done. He says he's actually spoken to people who's, he says it in the film. He says, you know, I've spoken to people who've said, we'll work with this other guy as long as you don't work with Josephson, you know, because the stigma of it, you know, it's just like, oh, that's too crazy or whatever, you know, it's like, but again, times are changing.
Too crazy scares people. Yes. I see it in entertainment as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
When you're surrounded by business people, mm-hmm. and science is business. Yes. Like if you go, hey, here are the results of this, I want to know who funded it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a good chance they had something to do with the results, or at least the interpretation of the results.
Dude, I went to a local college that has an agricultural program, and I'm walking in the door, and I went there to go buy some like good organic produce. You know, I was like, oh, I'm gonna get some good, like, you know, bell peppers and stuff like that. And I walked in, and I walked right up to the kid at the counter, and I said, hey, where's your organic section? I wanna get something. And he goes, we don't have an organic section, sorry. You know, and it's like, okay, but it's all locally grown here on campus. Oh, okay. Guess who's funding their whole program?
Monsanto.
Yeah, Monsanto, DuPont, you know, Kellogg, like all of these companies that make pesticides. So do you think they're going to teach their students about how not to use pesticides?
No, of course.
No, hell no. And it's the same thing with any area of medicine, science, whatever. It's always about who is funding the studies. Who's funding this, you know, and so, yeah, it makes dogma, you know, is a very, very powerful word when it comes to science or religion, frankly.
Yeah, money, you know? And egos mm-hmm. really, like, hold people back mm-hmm. and hold back progress mm-hmm. in a lot of fields. Even, you know, it's like within comedy and in the industry, it's just like the suits, they're basically gamblers, and
right.
they gamble and mm-hmm. like they'll rig the race for mm-hmm. that particular person mm-hmm. and they don't like when a wild card comes because like even if you look at probably from a directing point of view, if you look at televisions, like they don't want a hit show that's so crazy out there,
right?
Because then mm-hmm. it forces them to have to try to duplicate that or work outside this very simple box.
You're seeing that right now on YouTube. You know, you're seeing that on YouTube. You're seeing it's like the tail wags the dog now. You know, it's like, and I think you're going to start to see it in a lot of other areas too. Probably energy, I hope. You know, for sure, because that's the other thing. You know, is that you know, people working on free energy, people working on revolutionary energy ideas, and also people working in consciousness. These are people who are working in sort of a vacuum. You know, but the problem or for the status quo now is that you do have the internet. You know, you do have alternative routes. It's like a leaky dam with all of this stuff just sort of sneaking out. You know,
it's blood in the water, in my opinion. And it's they're trying their hardest to control it.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily there's dudes who live in basements who mm-hmm. can't get laid. And their whole thing is, how can I just burn everything down? How can I disrupt the system? And that's by creating this new website,
right.
creating this VPN,
right.
creating something that does not allow these people mm-hmm. to control this amazing thing that mm-hmm. if they had their way,
right.
it would be just their websites for you to check out.
But there's a new way of controlling it. And the new way of controlling it is you throw so much shit in the air. It's not like they try to shut the information down. What they do is they put out like tons and tons of stuff. Yeah.
Bullshit.
That like you can't rise above all of that. You know, like that's what's happened. I realized this after I spent 5 years studying this stuff and researching it and shooting and going around the world interviewing these people. And the story again and again and again was that they were all frustrated because they can't even when they can talk about it, like they can't get their message out in a big enough way because it just doesn't reach that level of critical mass. Our film is so far the best shot that we've had at getting this sort of stuff out because it's just like lost in the jet stream of BS. And you know, so many people, you stop them on the street and you say something like, oh, you know, the U.S. government did remote viewing. Again and again, you'll hear people say, oh, yeah, but that didn't work. You know, I saw men with steroid goats.
Oh, that's been debunked. That's the big thing.
That's been debunked. I actually went to some studio executives and I talked to them about this. I went to a really good friend of mine who was a award-winning filmmaker, old friend of mine from school. We had like a four-hour conversation argument about why I should not make the film. You know, because he said, oh, dude, you're going to ruin your reputation. You know, you got a good reputation. Don't do this. I'm telling you, I've already researched it. I researched it. I was going to do something on it. And then I found out it was all bogus and lies. And I told him, I said, send me your research. Please, I want to see what you've researched. Show me. He goes, wow, it was like Wikipedia and a few other things. I was like, no, that's not research, man.
Yeah.
You know, no.
It's like people who do Snopes, puts down a Snopes, a link, and they're like, look, Snopes was wrong so many times.
Right.
I keep score. Mm-hmm. Like, conspiracy theorists keep score. Was there any of the incidents that stood out to you, the operations, the missions that stood out more than others, were like, just like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, not so much one operation, but one remote viewer, you know, would be Pat Price. Pat.
I have a question about
sure.
it. Sure. Heart attack?
Heart attack. Ah, see, he's asking the big question. You know, did he die of a heart attack? See, this guy, I'll tell that story.
All right.
Yeah, so Pat Price and his story is fascinating because here's a guy who literally was a police commissioner, probably blocks away from here, you know, and he was the guy who would be sitting in his office and detectives would come in and say, you know, I've got this really hard case. I can't find this like car that's been stolen. You mind helping me out? And he would look at a map and he'd go, yeah, here, there's a guy that kind of like seems like your perp.
What?
And his heart's racing and, you know, why don't you look in this alleyway? And then they'd find the car and they'd find the dude.
What?
Yeah.
Psychic cop.
Yeah, that's Pat Price. So like, see this drawing right here.
So
yeah,
that's him with the weird, like, kindergarten teacher sweater up there.
No, that was actually Ingo. That's Ingo. That's Pat all the way over to the left there on the far side. He was an older man.
Go down.
He's actually not even that old. He's like in his 50s. But go back to that drawing. This drawing, the one you were just looking at. Yeah, that. Okay, so this was the thing. Like the earlier stuff that I told you about got CIA interested in this, but this right here, this drawing, was the thing that hooked them completely into that it was real. Because see, even after they'd gotten all that great information about the NSA and everything, the CIA is naturally suspicious, right? They're going to be like, somebody's conning us. It's not real.
Right, so
Ken Kress, this undercover CIA guy, was hiding out at a hotel. And he had given Pat Price these coordinates to look at. And Pat Price draws that crane on the right. You know, that like pencil sketch, right? Okay, so Hal Putoff, the guy actually in the photo down at the bottom of the screen there, that's Hal. You know, Hal Putoff then goes back to Ken Kress's hotel room. Pat didn't even know he was working for CIA yet or anything. You know, he didn't know specifically anything. They just said, hey, we'll look here. We'll look and see what's here, right? So he goes and brings that drawing. Go back to the drawing for a minute. That drawing right there on the right, the facility that they were looking at, that was that drawing on the left is the actual facility. That's actually a CIA sketching overlay of a satellite image, because they don't give you the real satellite image because they don't want you to know how much detail they actually have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that is the actual crane. If you notice, both of them have eight wheels.
Yeah.
You know, Pat in his transcript said, it's incredibly, huge. It's so huge that I'm sitting there and I can just see it rolling right over my head because it's so big. If you notice, go look at the photo again.
Yeah.
Like right there,
right,
is a
little person.
Yeah, a little person. There's a little person.
Oh, it looks like a thumbtack, but it's actually a person explaining, trying to give you an understanding of scale, how big it is. And he looks like smaller than the Bic Pen guy. It's
right.
like a tiny, right, tiny, right. tiny,
and
tiny
And that
dude.
Is how the guy described it, right? And then he also went on to describe stuff going on underground, and he said underground they were working on these gores, like to create spheres. And he nailed it within like 12 inches as to how big the spheres actually were in reality.
Oh my God.
And but the thing is, see, the crane was enough to convince CIA that this guy was pretty much for real, but they didn't know about the gores, you know, and they didn't know about the beam weapon that was being built there underground. So they just thought he got that wrong, right? It wasn't until 4 years after the dude died that Aviation Week wrote an article about the gores of Semipalatinsk, because the Soviets at that point had opened the facility up because of some treaty or something, and Aviation Week had gotten in there and taken pictures. And then that's how they learned about it. But it was 4 years after the dude died. So unless he was actually a Soviet agent working in Russia and knew about it, nobody in U.S. intelligence knew about it. And that, to me, was a huge thing in the documentary. I actually, all of the military and the CIA people that we interviewed, I went to them and I said, you know, so did anybody know about this? You know, because you can't debunk that. You know, like there's no way for them to debunk that. So that was really a key thing. But this guy was so good that when they finally realized there was something to it, they still weren't totally convinced. So they said, okay, we're going to end the project with Stanford Research Institute. We're going to shut them out. And we're going to basically kidnap Pat Price. they basically compelled him to move to Virginia to a farm where he was constantly monitored 24 hours a day. And they gave him a cover of a like coal mine manager or something. And they basically would have him sit in a room and do remote viewings for CIA under surveillance without any outside involvement.
How did they find him? How did they find this guy that was just a cop?
Well, according to Hal in the movie, Pat reached out to SRI. You know, now I'll tell you a little known thing that is not in the film, and that is that both Ingo and Pat were both Scientologists, and they were both in the Church of Scientology, and they may have known each other. I mean, it's possible that Ingo said, "Hey, why don't you?" You know, check out this cool thing I'm doing. And Scientology in general was a very psychic friendly, you know. And
Scientology,
yeah. And I chose not to even put that into the film because I didn't want the film to be about Scientology.
Right.
Such bigger issues here.
Yeah.
Go watch
that.
Clear or something else if you want to talk about Scientology. I wanted to talk about, you know, this other
remote
stuff.
Viewing.
Yeah, but there was some very interesting connections there through the church. Because I think, especially at that time when the church was first getting going, they were very friendly to psychic abilities. And actually, a large part of their sort of system or whatever kind of thing they're doing was about remote viewing. You know, it was about that. They didn't call it that, but it was like something like that. So I think that both of them probably came out of that world, you know, and that's
sure.
Where they got them started.
For sure. Know? So they round these guys up and they make them join this department of the CIA, and we've learned that there's different departments in the CIA. Mm-hmm. It's not all spy espionage. They have obviously something like this. There's the people who just work in the office.
Right.
There's the office people who mm-hmm. I need your receipts for the ammo. You know, you gotta get me the receipts. I can't give you cash unless I have your receipts. And then there's the assassins.
They have an errand too.
What you're talking about is stovepiping. They call it stovepiping. You know, stovepiping is, if you imagine a stovepipe, it's this long narrow tube, right?
Right.
That's the way all of these special access projects work. You know, it's like from the UFO subject to like the psychic stuff to MK Ultra to whatever. The left hand purposely never knows what the right hand
is
doing.
Yes,
they keep it all separate. But I want to get back. Can I get back to answering his question?
Course,
right. So the last thing that Pat Price did before he died was he was tasked. The CIA still was skeptical, right? They wanted to know, how the hell does this work? And they had no mechanism to prove it. They just knew it was useful. And so and this is probably circa 1976 or something, you know.
The golden days.
Yeah, so they brought in a guy who had actually broken into the Libyan embassy in New York, a CIA agent, and who knew the basic schematics of this embassy. And they wanted to know where the code room was in this embassy. And this guy had actually had access to that. So he knew, you know, the basics of that. So they just basically showed Pat a picture of the front of the building. And they said, here's your target. Where's the code room in it? You know, so he meticulously described the whole building, the way the stairs work, the carpet and all this kind of stuff. And he went into the code room. He described that. And then once he was in the code room, he said, oh, and by the way, there's some sort of stuff happening in the Libyan desert that these guys are like dealing with. There's like a terrorist training camp out there and they're speaking like Chinese and all these other Russian and all these languages. And it's probably out here in this location and whatever. And not only did they look and find that terrorist training camp, yeah, which nobody knew about, you know, and but they also, the guy that was there in the embassy said, yeah, this guy was like there. I said, I don't know how he knows any of this stuff. So they proved that he knew all of this. And then several days later, he was dead.
Who, Pat?
Heart attack.
Pat.
Heart attack.
Pat, they killed him all, you think?
Yeah. I don't know if they killed him. I don't know. I mean, I have no firsthand evidence, right? But I'll tell you, by that point, the CIA had trained up at least two other competent remote viewers, you know, from SRI. So they had their own kind of stuff going. And we think of intelligence as this monolithic thing, right? But actually, with Pat's passing, the official CIA program ended. And this was in the early 70s. I mean, you know, mid-70s, whatever.
Come on.
No. The official.
Yeah.
The official.
Right,
but
right.
See, SRI, who was an outside contractor, their whole deal is to go get other contracts. So they started contracts with – they already had the reputation. So they had contracts with the Army and the Navy and the Air Force and Secret Service. And, like, I mean, they were doing tasks for everybody, not just CIA. So this was not a CIA-centric only, you know, kind of a thing. But there's different stories. You know, when Pat died – he actually was on furlough from his like farm in Virginia, and he was flying out to LA to go visit SRI, and he stopped overnight in Vegas, and he had dinner with a friend, and then he claimed that he had been poisoned. You know, he didn't know if it was food poisoning or what it was, but he got violently ill. He went back to his room and was like throwing up, you know, and stuff like that.
Oh my God!
And basically, yeah, he died that night. He died that night. He passed away.
So you don't leave the CIA. That's
well,
and that's why when, like, I found it very interesting you meeting these gentlemen. And who's this guy right here? Russell?
Yeah, that's Russell. Russell Targ is the guy who produced the documentary with me.
He looks like he's remote view. If remote viewing was a person, that's what it would look like.
Russell is legally blind. Right.
Really?
Yeah, he's got a resolution problem with his eyes, and he has a failure to be able to recognize faces, like it's a genetic thing. But he rode a motorcycle in the San Francisco area for like 30 years. Because basically by psychic ability and memory, you know.
What?
Yeah, he can see, but he can't see well. But he does. He'll tell you, I do a really good impersonation of a guy who can see. You know, and it's true. I mean, I've spent enough time with him now to know this. But when Russell was a kid, he would do magic shows, and he was a magician. You know, he was like a street performer. He'd do like mental magic and stuff like that, and he would notice that he'd be doing his mental magic thing. An image would pop into his mind about, you know, somebody living in a yellow house with a white picket fence, and he'd say that to this person, and then go, oh my God, you're brilliant, that's right. And so he realized that he was doing stuff that you know, wasn't mental magic, you know. And years later, he went on and he became a physicist. He was one of the inventors of the high-powered laser, you know. So I mean, he's like a legit physicist, and as is Hal Putoff, his partner. He spent years researching psychic ability kind of just as a hobby, you know, and then he went to Sylvania Laser Laboratories. He was working there, and he convinced his boss to start a parapsychology psychic ability ESP
department,
research program.
Yeah.
And he'd invented this like little four-choice machine that's like a random number generator that like you can predict what number is going to come up next using psychic ability, according to him, which is now, by the way, an iPhone app. You can get it on your iPhone for free.
You can guess what the number's going to be.
Yeah, yeah, it's this tool that he wound up inventing for NASA and at Sylvania.
That'd be a great way for the CIA to find, or anybody to find out who's psychic.
Maybe. Yeah,
hey,
maybe.
This dude is nailing these numbers.
That's it.
Flying.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. You know, but his goal, I'll tell you though, Russell's goal. Russell left the program much earlier than everybody else because he wanted to tell people about their own psychic abilities. So I believe that's really Russell's thing. When Russell invented this thing, and they accidentally put out an ad in a newspaper saying we're looking for psychic subjects.
Yes.
And they weren't supposed to say that.
Yeah.
You know, like they were supposed to say something different. Yeah. And the guy screwed up. And lo and behold, they get a call from Bobby Kennedy at the time.
Bobby
Kennedy. Who was I guess he was the representative of whatever district or you know that this took place in, and he had gotten so many phone calls from like concerned citizens about this evil demonic thing that was going on at Sylvania Labs that he shut the whole thing down. He said if you don't shut this down, then GM, you know, the parent company and everything, the government's not going to give you any more funding. You know, so they had to shut it down. That was Russell's first experience in government. You know, but then he went on. He met Hal, and they took his four choice, random number generator machine to a NASA conference, and he met Wernher von Braun. You know, Wernher von Braun is the rocket guy, ex-Nazi. Really, a little blemish on the record. But the moon landing.
We were just in Huntsville, Alabama. Yeah. God bless you guys who came. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a big turnout for our show. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the first that wasn't a big turnout. Yeah. We usually do pretty good numbers. Mm-hmm. And they were talking. One of the people came to the show. You go, you know where you're at, right? You're in Huntsville, Alabama,
yeah.
And this is where like von Braun. You couldn't say he was a Nazi until like the 80s. Like everyone was in full denial of like what he was a part of.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 But they took full advantage of all of those guys. I mean,
the Nazis were into like psychic stuff as
absolutely.
Well. Like testing like twins. If I burnt you, would your twin feel it?
They had a whole other side to what they were doing with the occult. And again, they were much more interested in just like the Soviets. It's like the good side of the force and the dark side of the force. Like these guys were interested in like choking people and like, you know, causing heart attacks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right. But von Braun did very, very well on Russell's ESP tester. And he was so good at it, he brought it to the administrator of NASA and he said, we should fund this. This is great. So that's how they got their first funding to get started basically NASA provided money so that they could teach their astronauts to be more intuitive when something goes wrong. You know, and they found that using this machine, over 200 astronauts took part, and the vast majority of them were able to improve their scores over time, you know, using this. So it's possible to get better. But I tried it, you know, like when I first met Russell, he hands me his iPhone and he goes, here, you try it. And, you know, the pressure's on, right? I'm like taking this thing and I'm doing it. And I mean, I'm just like dismal. It's like I'm not getting anything right. And it's like literally like out of 25, I got like 5. You know, it was really bad. And I was so embarrassed. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I didn't get it. And he goes, no. He says, it's okay. He says, you actually are using reverse psi. Because it's impossible that you could have gotten that many wrong by chance.
I've always said that, dude.
Right,
if you're making like a parlay and you get none of them right, you should get some kind of award for that.
Right. It's like you can actually go to Vegas and be so psyched out about winning that you intentionally pick the wrong bet again and again.
It's happened all the time. Ask Bet DSI. It's happened to me a ton of time. Now, when you met these guys, what were they like? Were they... I mean, was there ever a darkness to this program that maybe they regretted, or were they just like, oh, I can finally tell my story. It's cool that, you know, we can, because you mentioned that you had gone through, I believe it was you in the movie, had gone through and requested these documents. And finally you got them and you handed it to our friend and, he goes, finally I can talk about this.
Joseph Mengele?
No, the other guy. He had said, finally I can talk about this and show these without having to kill them after.
Right,
you know,
right,
which
right.
Obviously it was a tongue-in-cheek joke, but...
You know, was there a darkness to this? You know, these people were working in actual real intelligence operations where real actions were taken and people could have died. You know, like this was not like the pretend CIA or the pretend, you know, Department of the Navy or whatever. This was real stuff. Actions were taken. But what people don't realize often is that actions are never taken in a void. I mean, maybe they are now. Like with our current, you know, situation, maybe they are now because, but nobody just uses their gut and then bombs, you know, a city or something. I mean, it's like, you know, intelligence is built upon a lot of different things, and there's a lot of unreliable sources in intelligence. So this is one more source. So what would happen is they would basically say, okay, we think this is going to happen here. Look here, and then that corresponds with a bunch of other information and gives them a better idea of what's actually going to happen. I asked that very same question to Hal Puthoff, who was the co-founder of this program, and I was in a quiet moment, and I said, you know, do you ever regret doing this? You know, like do you think maybe this could have been used wrongly? And he said, no, I don't. He said, and the reason is because wars are not started by intelligence. Wars are started out of ignorance. You know, when you don't know what your enemy is going to do, you're much more likely to go after them.
Yes.
You know, like if you know what your enemy is going to do, there's usually another scenario besides conflict. And I thought that was a very interesting and profound way of looking at this. I do think that the potential is there to misuse this kind of stuff,
but
the potential for misusing your freaking cell phone,
everything is
like,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, look, this whole conversation is being recorded right now.
Sure,
I mean, you know,
for
like,
sure, we love you,
yeah,
CIA.
Yeah, go watch, you know, Citizen Four or whatever. Like, you know, it's like the tools that they have now are so far advanced to what they had back then.
And what we don't even know what they. I mean, like. We know this for right now, and that's the 80s.
Right.
We don't know what they have in 2019.
Oh, dude, let me tell you. Like, I was talking to Hal, pretty much the same conversation, and I said, is there anything that you worked on that wasn't this, but that was really classified that you can now talk about? And you know, he started his career. He was a laser physicist like Russell. They were partners. But before that, he was in naval intelligence in the reserves, and he was still a physicist. And he said, yeah, he says, it's been declassified now. I can talk about this other thing. I was in charge of a program called Project Lightning for the government. He says, and our goal was by 1968 to develop a 1 gigahertz computer, a supercomputer. You know, and now, as we know, the gigahertz computer came out like what, in the 90s, maybe, like, you know, mid to late 90s, something. They hit a gigahertz, you know. I said, well, how far did you guys get? And he said, well, he says, we got to like 0.8 something gigahertz by the time I left in like 69 or 68 or something. And I said, how long did it take the rest of the world to get that computer? And he said, about 30 years later.
Yeah, that's what they do. They slowly roll it out.
Right. And he said, so now he says, anytime I look at an electronic device or any other piece of technology, I go, okay, I have to extrapolate out about 30 years ahead. And that's what they actually have.
It's unbelievable. As you did this movie, what has been the response? Have you been contacted by any psychic people going, hey, I live this life.
Absolutely.
This ain't a movie. This ain't a lifestyle. This is my life.
Yeah, I've gotten, you know, correspondence with a lot of people who
are
claim,
any of them hot?
I don't know. Most of it's email, so it's digital. Probably not, but they're probably in their basement and, you know, very pasty. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, it's I get a lot of contact with people who claim to all kinds of things, but this is the issue in this whole sort of arena that we're in is that everybody can talk. I mean, everybody, like, you know, if you don't have the backup of it, you know, then it just doesn't, you can't prove anything. So it's interesting. You know, it's like Ingo Swann did all kinds of really cool remote viewings, like the backside of the moon and like bases on the moon.
Oh, so they can go beyond.
Oh, dude, they can go anywhere. They can go anywhere, anywhere. See, your consciousness
exists. This is incredible.
Your consciousness exists outside of time and space, right?
Yes.
So it's just as easy to see an event that's going to happen next week or last week, or 100 years ago, or what's happening on Mars at this moment, or happening on some other system somewhere far away. They proved this again and again. 6 months before the first probe from Earth got to Jupiter, they tasked Ingo Swann on trying to find out what was going to be found when that probe got there, right? And he starts drawing like rings around the planet, and he says, "I see ice crystals, ice rings around Jupiter," and everybody's going, "No, man, you're getting it wrong. And that's Saturn, right? Right? That's it, right there. Yeah, this is the excellent man. Excellent, thank you. Good job, my friend. This is the actual piece of paper. This is the actual piece of paper that he drew, and you see, he draws this like ring around that." And everybody goes, "Oh, dude, he's screwing up. He's drawing Saturn. You know, like Saturn's the one where you can see that with the telescope. No, that's wrong." And then he goes, no. Because he goes, "What, you think?" He says, "I've been doing this my whole life. You think I don't know what Saturn looks like?" He says, "I know what Saturn looks like. This is Jupiter." You know, and so he sticks by his thing. And then 6 months later, the first images come back. There's ice crystals around Jupiter that nobody had ever seen with the telescope before. You know, so he got that right. So now you got to think, okay, so that means that we're not talking about terrestrial communication. We're not talking about something that already is in somebody's database. We're talking about anything, anywhere in real time. You know, so the speed of light doesn't apply. You know, like all that stuff does not apply anymore. So are we, like, for instance, with trying to contact extraterrestrial cultures, let's say?
Which is what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, like why are we using radio telescopes, you know, that take light years to do anything when you probably have other cultures and civilizations out there somewhere in the universe? I mean, it just makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And they're going, "Dude, we've been sending you the vibes all this time and you're not picking it up,"
right?
Because you're trying to look it on your walkie-talkie. Ain't happening.
Do you now? Has this opened? Have you? It sounds like as a kid you were into the extra. I don't want to say paranormal, but the that there's more there.
Yeah, I mean, always. There. I mean, look, we're artists, right? I mean, it's like, I mean, if you're an artist, you have to be interested in the world around you, you know, and you have to question the world around you, right? And for me, I've always been the sort of person that likes to just think outside of the box and like think what else it could be possible. I mean, it's just part good writing, right? I mean, it's I liked all this stuff, but I also found it a lot scarier when I was a kid. I don't find it scary now.
I find it so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I mean, I think that the easy thing to do with this kind of subject matter is to leave this podcast and go, "Oh man, dude, my neighbor's going to know everything I'm thinking. You know, like my boss is going to know I'm late. You know, like the CIA spying on me, you know, like whatever." No. It's not that kind of ability. And any more than like, I don't think that, I just think that the world is a very mysterious place, but we're a lot more powerful within it than we give ourselves credit for. You know, and so that's the key takeaway that I've gotten through the wisdom of years. You know, like initially I was kind of like, "Oh man, you know, there's so much scary stuff that I don't know. Am I going to catch cancer? Is ET going to abduct me? Like, what's going on?" You know, and it's like, no, you know, we are very powerful beings if we are just aware, you know, of our surroundings, and if we use our own discernment. And there's so many people out there that just peddle all the negative stuff to scare the out of you.
They don't want you looking into
right,
this.
Right.
No.
Because it's like because then you start to realize, like, wait a minute, if that guy could do it, maybe I could do it.
Yeah.
You know, but again, I want to go back and be cautious and say, it's about balance. Because the people who could do this sort of thing were the most balanced people, the most sort of regular people. Like, you know, you don't need to go off and be real weird, you know, and then develop your psychic ability.
Right.
You know, like, it's like the SRI never had a problem getting funding if they were talking to the guy in charge. Like, if they were talking to the head of the CIA or the head of General Motors or whatever company they never had a problem. It was always the middle managers, you know, and the guys who were fear-based, who were like, "Oh, no, people are going to laugh at me. They're going to think it's crazy."
Yeah.
You know, "Oh, no." You know, no. It's the guys at the top are fucking already using
yes
this. You know, like that's how they're at the top, man.
Yes. I believe the world's gone.
You think any of these people used remote viewing after the CIA?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
dude.
You think so?
Dude, sure? So I'm working on a little mini doc on Uri Geller right now. Mm-hmm. Uri Geller was one of the people that we interviewed for this. And he claims that I went to his house in England. He's moved now to Israel, but he used to live in this giant mansion next to George Clooney off the River Thames in England. And we went to his house. And I'm like, dude, this guy's an entertainer, but he's not like freaking Elton John. I mean, how does he afford this like amazing house? And he claims it's because he did oil prospecting. Oh, you know, shit. He did like prospecting for gold. You know, he said that he did it for like one. He did it for the president of Mexico at one point. You know, and then I think he had a thing with the president's wife, and then he had to leave or something. I don't know what happened there, but it's in his book. You can read it. Yeah, he claims that that's what he did. There's also people like Joel McMonagle, the army guy that I mentioned. That dude is very successful. Like, you know, he runs right now the Monroe Institute, which is really key in sort of studying meditation techniques and out of body experiences and stuff like that. But he claims that he is currently and has been for a long time working for corporations. He'll do stuff like product development. Like, you know, he said that about 10 years before ebooks, he told a book publisher that came to him looking at trends, and he said, ditch paper. He said, it's going to all be a digital format in like the next decade. And the guy did it, and now they're doing very well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, he says he's even sitting on the boards of some corporations and getting a monthly salary as a board member. Just for occasionally doing some remote viewing, he says it takes him like a couple minutes, and he'll send him something. And,
unbelievable.
You know, like, so it's like they'll go to him and say, "All right, we're thinking about building our headquarters in this city. What do you think?" You know, and or there's Lori Williams. Lori Williams is actually not one of the original remote viewers, but she runs a company called Intuitive Specialists, and she learned from the original Army guys. Like, she spent years studying with Lynn Buchanan, who was one of the originals. And she works for, you know, corporations. She teaches. She's a great teacher. There's tons and tons of contemporary uses for this stuff that actually companies are already using. It even came out in the Sony hack that happened a couple of years ago, that they had hired like a remote viewer to look at trends and stuff like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. So, if there's any remote viewers out there, tell me how my podcast is going to do.
1 million subscribers.
Oh,
easy,
dude.
Easy.
From your lips to the aliens. Well, dude, this has been wonderful, Lan. I appreciate you coming out. Where can they find anything more about you? Where do you want our fans to go to look at?
Well, ThirdEyeSpies.com is a good starting place, because from there you can get links to everywhere the film is. The film's available worldwide right now across every digital platform. So you can get it on Amazon, you can get it on iTunes. And if you get it on iTunes, actually, there's 8 different extras that come with the film that are really cool, that I cut, like basically just additional little mini movies out of the film. So, you can get it on Google Play, Xbox, any cable network, et cetera. But if you go to ThirdEyeSpies.com, there's also a link to get DVDs. If you want like Blu-ray or DVDs. I'm actually, anybody that's hearing this, I'm behind on getting the Blu-ray master out, because I'm doing it all myself.
Oh, man.
It's a freaking pain, man. I mean, the technology now is so antiquated that like I'm using stuff that like is just constantly crashing, and you know, like on my new fancy computer, it's hard, man. It's like, you know, but people still like DVDs. I do. You know? It's like, so.
I love the collect those.
Yeah.
I mean, we're eventually going to, people like to own stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, not everything's meant to be digital,
mm-hmm.
and people need stuff to do cocaine off of.
Right. And I just made the thing for Amazon, where they just approved it. Well, pretty soon the DVD will also, and Blu-ray will be on Amazon as well. So you can go on there. But if and then on YouTube, there's a ton of extras. I'm starting to vlog more about this stuff, so there'll be new vlogs. And I have hundreds of hours of footage of this stuff. I mean, I spent so much time. So I will be slowly leaking out more and more like excerpts and interviews. I probably interviewed 60, 50 people. I don't even know, over the course of this, and only a fraction of those people actually made it into the documentary. And there's so many amazing stories.
I love it, dude.
Yeah.
You're going down the fun. I think the world is so much more interesting.
Oh, it is.
And all my friends who like mock me, and they're wonderful people. But it's just like, why do you want to live in that world where everything is in this box?
Yeah, man. Because
you're safe. It's just like the world is so extraordinary.
It's like it's a beautiful, mysterious world, and our own consciousness is right in the middle of it, and we ignore that. I mean, dude, I spent years, like you talk about Six Ring Samurai. And where have I been? You know, it's like, I made that movie. Where did I go? You know, it's like, well, I did some other things. I did some music videos. I did another movie that I didn't really like, but, you know, whatever. You know, but it was so much about my career, you know, and about like, oh, man, I got to get ahead. I got to do this other thing. And it's like, I was ignoring myself. And yes, finally, I just took the time out and I went, no. I want to know what I want to do. I'm tired of doing things that other people want me to do. And it's making me miserable. I was freaking miserable.
Yes, dude. Now you know, you're talking, bro.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I was fucking miserable. Like the last feature film I did, I almost, not Six String, but another film, whatever. But it's like, you know, it was The Crow. You know, I did a sequel to The Crow.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did a fucking sequel to The Crow. Yeah,
God, dude. You're rolling.
Killing it.
Dude. No, look, the people that I worked with on that film were awesome, but when you deal with a franchise like that,
right,
it is fucking hard.
A lot of suits.
Yeah,
a lot of people couldn't even direct the movie if they want to.
It's hard.
Welcome to comedy,
dude. I could write a
freaking
book about that if I wanted to spend the time. You know,
welcome
I mean,
to
it's,
comedy,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
It's the most annoying thing ever, and it's just like... what we're doing, what you're doing with your movie is peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
You're getting rid of the people who have to have a note to justify a check.
Yeah. Dude, that's it. And now, like, I'm going to be all about YouTube. I just want to make it all about YouTube.
My
like,
next special
might
go right to YouTube.
Yeah, I've got like maybe almost 10,000 subscribers right now. You know, like I just want to start
what's
like
your YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube is youtube.com/ Waking Universe TV.
I love it, dude.
Yeah, Waking Universe TV, or just type in my name, it'll come up. But I want to do exactly get rid of the middleman. You know, you don't need it. It's like I've got all of the freaking gear. I've got the lights. I've got the intelligence to do it. You know,
yeah.
It's like, I mean, it's like we don't need some dude sitting in a high rise going, yeah, you know, all right, you know, maybe, you know, like whatever. Like, no, it's just about the elbow grease now, no matter who you are, really, you know, and I'm so much happier, you know, just working with a small group of people and, you know, doing my own thing and hopefully like other projects soon. And
don't chase checks, chase passion, dude.
Right.
And I tell people that when they're podcasts, because I'm trying to, I see people who are, we're going to wrap it up, but I see people who are stuck all the time. And I have this beautiful thing that I've been blessed that has grown to the point I don't need. Like, I'm doing a very passionate project on television, but I don't need it anymore.
Right.
I'm doing it because the young guy wanted to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm blessed that they let me do it. And I'm not complaining about that. But I go on projects and I see people working for nothing.
Yeah.
And I give them the get your YouTube go, get your podcast going.
Yeah.
It's the underground railroad to happiness and financial freedom.
And it's creativity. You know, it's creativity because it's like if you actually have something to say, you can say it today and then tomorrow everybody around the world could be watching it.
Yes.
You know, that's it. It's like it's amazing when you combine that with all of this stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like which is like nothing compared to like what it used to be. You know, like I'm still fucking in debt over Six String Samurai, man. Yeah. It's like I mean that movie, you know, was so expensive because it's like 35 millimeter film and Panavision and like all this kind of stuff, and it's like the now I got a little DSLR that like kicks ass.
Yeah.
Like an iPhone.
Yeah.
An iPhone.
This is my favorite tool. Dude, it's another podcast, but like I went on a UFO summoning thing.
What?
Where you go out and you actually like meditate and like you can see UFOs and shit in the air. And I took about five of these and I hooked them up to night vision goggles. You know, and then I had a hard drive recorder with like a wireless setup to like record shit.
There you go.
It was like badass. And it was like this was way better than using like you know, expensive cameras.
Someone just recorded a whole comedy special. They bought like five iPhones, did it, edited it, returned the phones.
Yeah. Exactly.
What more do you want?
Yeah, exactly.
When are you doing that UFO thing?
Oh, man. Hopefully really soon. I'm talking to somebody right now, and I'll probably be teaming up with somebody to do this. And because I know we have to wrap up, but like the whole point to my last film, to Third Eye Spies, the real point is that your consciousness is key.
Yes.
You know, your consciousness. We all exist in like the eye of the storm.
Right.
You know, like we're sitting in the center of the universe.
Right.
And the only thing that fucks us up and throws us out of it is our own fear. You know, like when we get scared or apprehensive or angry or whatever, which is all just fear, right? Then we spin out of that and we lose that. But when you're centered and you're calm and you're doing the thing that you love doing, you're in the center of your own universe. You know, and that's where you gotta be if you really wanna be successful, right?
I love it, dude. Yeah. Please come on. I'm gonna go to that remote viewing thing. Anytime you do some, you know, hooking up with UFO stuff. Yeah.
Dude, come to a UFO summiting. We'll do it, man.
When? You just let me know, dude. I'm in.
My freaking distributor was talking to me on the phone, and he does this, and he will actually like do a meditation and then like see lights and stuff, right? And he goes, dude, I gotta go. There's like a light out here, and he like freaking filmed it and put it up on YouTube. You know, it's like cause stuff just happens around
him
now.
I'm in, dude.
Yeah,
I'm in.
We'll do it. We'll do it. We're done.
Answer your bad man. Yeah. Thank you everybody for tuning in. It's Third Eye Spies. Go to thirdeyespies.com, and I'm telling you, you're gonna love this movie. It's mind blowing. It's slick. It's interesting. It's got a lot of awesome information, and if you love this podcast, I guarantee you're gonna love the movie. And hey man, I appreciate you guys. It's been a great week. This is dropping tomorrow. We drop the Armenian genocide episode that I'm gonna do every year, and it's a great time to be alive, dude. Take what we said here tonight, apply it to your own life, find passion, and find a way to create art based on that passion.
Bingo.
And you'll be a happier person.
Bingo.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Foil, foil, patting, patting, foil, patting, patting.